The Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas. All persons having business before the Honorable, Supreme Court of Texas, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the state of Texas and this Honorable.
Thank you. Please be seated. Good morning. The court has three matters on its oral submission docket. In the order of their appearance, they are docket number 040160, Maria Christina Brittingham Sadebe Ayala versus the ancillary estate of Juan Roberto Brittingham McLean, deceased, from Webb County and the 4th Court of Appeals District. Justice O'Neill and Justice Green are not sitting in this case. Docket number 040247, the County of Dallas versus Wenda L. Willen, as administrator for the estate of Stanley Gaines, Jim Gillian, and Sonia Avina from Dallas County and the 5th Court of Appeals District. And that is consolidated for argument with 040631, County of Dallas, Texas, and Derek Evans, Constable, Precinct Number 7 from Dallas County and the 5th District. The court has allotted 20 minutes per side in these matters, and the court will take a brief recess after the first argument. We expect to conclude the arguments before noon. These proceedings are being recorded digitally. A link to the argument should be posted on the court's website by the end of the day. The governor has nominated Chief Justice Phil Johnson of Amarillo to fill the current vacancy on the court, and we are awaiting Senate action on the nomination. The court is ready to hear argument in 040160, Maria Christina Brittingham versus the ancillary estate of Juan Roberto Brittingham.
May it please the court, Ms. Rosemary Pendeski will present argument with the petitioner. The petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. Rose Pendeski and Wendell Hall with full right for the petitioner. The movement below has sought to dismiss this ancillary probate jurisdiction matter on the basis of lack of subject matter jurisdiction. This case involves a foreign will and a foreign decedent who was domiciled outside of the state of Texas at the time of his death. In situations like these, the probate
judge... Is the widow still involved in the case?
No, Your Honor. She has settled with the family members and is no longer involved in this case at all. She was initially a member of this litigation as the representative of the ancillary estate. There is a current representative who was appointed last month by the County Court. That's Kevin Michael Mackey.
She initiated this proceeding, but she's not in it.
Exactly. Returning to the structure of the probate code, it provides a variety of mechanisms for a foreign executor to come to Texas to address any property that may be here that needs to be addressed.
It's not clear to me exactly what your position is. It seems like under 95B1 that you can probate the will as just basically as a ministerial act. Are you saying you can't even do that?
No, Your Honor. What we're saying is that you can perform a variety of functions according to the needs of the estate. You can do nothing. There are both common law and statutory vehicles to come to Texas.
I thought at one point in your brief you said that since there's no property, it's your position, there's no property in Texas, they can't even file the will and the procedures of 95B.
95B is a ministerial process, so they could have just filed it. There is nothing that can be done because it's a ministerial process. Other than to file a motion to challenge the subject matter jurisdiction under 95, which is what happened here. Our contention is that there is an escalating level of court intervention for the probate of foreign wills, either a set of activities for which there is no court intervention, ancillary jurisdiction under 95, which is a slightly more involved court process. Excuse me, I forgot the name.
I guess I'm getting, is this really a question of jurisdiction or that the statutory probate court or the probate court just exceeded its powers?
It is a question of subject matter jurisdiction because under Section 95, ancillary probate jurisdiction is limited to a certain level of activity. What should have happened, perhaps, in this case, is activation of Section 103 of the probate code. That's significant for this case.
So what if she could, if someone goes back and files a 103 action, then what would your position be?
My position at this point would be such an action would be barred by limitations under the probate code.
If it had been filed timely, what would your position be?
My position would be that it might be possible to pursue the types of claims that are at issue here, which are primarily causes of action. Also, some dispute over whether or not there's assets in the decedent's name. Those would be viable under Section 103 by operation of 5F. The distinction...
Well, to be clear, your position is that this case could have been brought under 95 or 103, or not?
It could have been brought under 95 or 103, but if brought under 95, it was subject to challenge for lack of subject matter jurisdiction, because 95 is a limited jurisdictional provision for the ancillary probate for disposition of property in the state and for protection of local creditors. This dispute really is a dispute about the difference between Section 95 ancillary jurisdiction and 103 original probate jurisdiction. The primary difference is one of functionality. To understand that function, we need to return to overall the chapter on the probate of foreign wills and understand that there is an escalating level of court involvement for the convenience of the parties and for the efficacious use of judicial resources as well.
Why is it inconvenient for the parties here when this will was filed in Webb County, Texas?
It's inconvenient because the primary jurisdiction, the first court involved, is the one in Mexico. And whether or not it's actually viable under 103 is not at issue here. The only statutory provision under the probate code that was articulated in the application for probate is Section 95, ancillary probate jurisdiction. It was then subject to challenge to determine whether or not there were local creditors to protect or whether there was any local asset to distribute. The difference between 95 and 103 is really pertinent in connection with the overall structure of the probate code. Under Section 5F, we know that courts exercising original probate jurisdiction can hear matters incident to or appertaining to an estate. That's a functional difference. It's a significant functional difference here because the real dispute is over a cause of action, which was identified by the Fourth Court of Appeals. There are also some procedural differences between 95 and 103 that highlight the distinctions or the limitations in the subject matter jurisdiction. Significantly, 95 is ministerial. The case law says that neither the court nor the clerk has any discretion to accept a 95 application for probate. There is no need for service of process, no need for notice. The same is not true for Section 103. There are also some differences in language between the two sections that highlight the purpose of Section 95 as a vehicle for disposing of property or protecting local creditors. Under Section 103, you can address additional matters via operation of Section 5F, the incident to or appertaining to jurisdiction.
So you're saying that if this had been brought under 103, you wouldn't have any objection to it?
Well, we'd have a variety of objections. We just wouldn't have the ones that we have today.
And why can't you just treat a case filed under Section 95 as one filed under 103? There's not a whole lot of difference in some respects. Some respects there are, but...
Exactly. Because the probate code does not contain a mechanism for converting one type of application to another.
Well, that sort of is water on the paddle that there's no difference, no reason to convert them. It's not like different bankruptcy proceedings. It's just more of the same, just different forms of probate.
They are more forms of the same. But there are reasons for those differences. Convenience of the parties, of course. If you don't need to spend as much money to go under 103, then don't go under 103.
In your view, could you file under both sections at the same time?
I think out of an abundance of caution, if you didn't know which proceeding to invoke, you could do that.
Seems pretty formal.
It is formal, but welcome to the world of probate. As this court has said in its prior opinions, it's very complex and it's code-driven.
But were all of the requirements otherwise set forth in 103 met, except for signing 103? In other words, there was notice, there was service.
Well, there was notice and service of the original petition. The application for probate, which was filed in early August of 2000, had notice in the sense that it was posted at the courthouse door of Laredo. I question whether that's sufficient under the other provisions of the probate code to satisfy 103. Eventually, the original petition was served, although it's questionable whether it was served correctly. But that doesn't really matter for purposes of this discussion. The operative document was not the original petition or the plea intervention, which is filed much later in time. The operative document that triggered the county court's jurisdiction was the application for foreign probate of a will. The historical purpose of 95, we know from the case law, is that it's to protect local creditors and to distribute assets. Even the word ancillary connotes something that is subordinate, secondary, and adjunct to the main probate proceeding, which was initiated 2 years earlier in Mexico. There is a new appeal pending in your court, recently filed involving personal jurisdiction matters. And in that case, the current representative of this ancillary estate admits that the purpose of ancillary jurisdiction is one to complement and coordinate with the main jurisdiction. In this case, that's the court in Mexico. There are two components to this dispute. One is a group of causes of action. That's what the Fourth Court of Appeals identified as a potential cause of action to recover property that may have been in the state and may have been wrongfully removed at some point after the decedent's death. This cause of action is admittedly by all the parties incident to or appertaining to the estate. That's only viable under Section 103 by operation of 5F. It is not viable under Section 95.
Let me ask you about the appellate jurisdiction. How does this fit under Croson?
The Fourth Court of Appeals found that the motion to dismiss for lack of subject matter jurisdiction concluded a phase of the probate proceeding. It also addressed the removal of Anna Maria, the wife, as the original representative of the estate, but that issue is no longer operative. The Fourth Court found
that... How did it conclude a phase? It just said the case could keep going.
It could keep going. But for subject matter jurisdiction, that's the threshold for continuing. The structure in Carlson was set up to give the appellate courts the opportunity to intervene in probate matters, which sometimes can take years,
but
centuries, perhaps, to conclude.
We've been intervening in this one a lot in the last year. So that's what worries me is that if there's jurisdiction here, I assume you think there was jurisdiction, appellate jurisdiction in the Mackey appeal. And there the trial court just denied Mr. Tiarina's application for appointment as successor administrator, right?
And there's case law that says that is final appeal. As Your Honor may know, there are 13 trial and appellate matters that have sprung out of this one ancillary jurisdiction with a possible 14th on its way. So subject matter jurisdiction is a critical issue for this ancillary probate. I see that my time is coming to a close.
If there's jurisdiction under Croson, though, it's because we consider the order appealed from to be final. Is that
exactly, Your Honor. And if it's final for purposes of the Court of Appeals, and the briefs in this court admit that it was final for that purpose, it must also be final for appeal to this court as well. The Fourth Court of Appeals did not go beyond this potential cause of action. It effectively found that there was no other property. It's my contention that the operative point in time is the date of application, not the date of death. And that's significant if the court goes beyond the fourth court's holding to look at the trial court's finding. The county court found that there was property in the state of Texas at the time of death, an IBC account. We know that it cannot be at the time of death because Probate Code Section 2 requires in rem. The case law requires property to be an indispensable party. It did not exist here. As for the other accounts that were not in the decedent's name, they too were dispersed by the time the application was filed. Additionally, there's the problem of jumping past the hurdle that it was those assets belonged to corporations. Furthermore, the stock of those corporations belonged to the executors and not the decedents. There should have been allegations to either pierce the corporate veil, allege alter ego, something of that nature. None of that is in this case. But if those allegations had been properly made, they would be incident to or appertaining to an estate, and not viable under Section 95, only viable under Section 93. There's the additional problem that they would be viable as a means of seeking a constructive trust. And we know from Section 5A, a constructive trust is only a remedy available in a statutory probate court or a district court. And this court that's handling the probate matter is a statutory county court, and it therefore has no jurisdiction. It also lacks jurisdiction because its amount of controversy has been exceeded substantially.
Are there any further questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from the respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. Shannon Ratliff will present argument with the respondents.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. I think what the nub of this controversy is basically the petitioner takes the position that a U.S. citizen holding a promissory note payable by a Mexican national who deceases in Mexico has only the remedy available of filing their claim in the probate court in Mexico. I first want to address the issue that Justice Heck first raised, and that is the question of how this case is in this court. Petitioner, in filing the petition, did not assert that there was any conflict, and instead relied upon important questions of law, despite the fact that this is, even according to the petitioner, an appeal from an interlocutory order entered by the probate court. I think there are two significant problems with jurisdiction. The first is that, as Justice Heck said, the question is, what does the denial of a motion to dismiss, what phase of the case does that complete? It is unlike Grossen, where the question was whether the heirship should, whether she should have been declared an heir as the common law wife of the decedent. The determination was made that she was not the common law wife. That terminated her ability to participate in the proceeding, and therefore, under Grossen, that was an appealable interlocutory order, at least as it was entered there, because as I recall, there was also a severance after that determination. So I think there's the initial threshold question of, did the Court of Appeals actually have any jurisdiction, and therefore did this court?
Do you think Croson would have come out differently if the situation had been flipped so that the judge had decided that she was the common law wife and then the other side tried to appeal?
I've worried about that. And the reason I worry about it is because that determination in Croson would have meant that as the common law wife, she would be entitled to participate in the distribution of the estate, and if that were an error, then error would pervade the record from start to finish. So I'm not trying to dodge the question. I just have to candidly admit I don't know, but I would say that even in that situation, there would be a stronger argument that that completed a phase of the case, as long as that order was a severed order. And the only reason I say that is that there is now a determination that if wrong means that all of the subsequent actions in marshaling and distributing the estate could be subject to that error. But in this instance, what you have, I think, is exactly what you said, Your Honor, and that is all that has happened here is that the court has said you may proceed. It seems to me this is much more akin to something such as a determination that venue exists, or that venue, that there's a transfer, and of course there the cases appear to be clear that that would not give rise to an appealable order under Croson, at least. So I think that's a problem. The second problem, I think, is that they did not assert conflict, but then responded and said the conflict was with a case called St. Louis Southwestern Railway versus Smitha, a 1921 Texas case. And Smitha was about an FELA claim that a representative was allowed to be appointed in Bowie County, Texas, to pursue that FELA claim after the railway worker died in California as a result of a different cause. I fail to see that is a distinction. As a matter of fact, it occurs to me that is exactly in line with what we're talking about here. Everyone recognizes, and I don't think petitioner denies, that if there is property located in Texas, that the Mexican executor, acting as an executor under Mexican law, cannot transfer, make any determinations with regard to property located in Texas. Now, there's an argument by petitioner that only applies to property on hand at the time the application is filed. I would submit to you that argument would render Section 6 of the Probate Code, which is the venue provision, it would render it pretty useless, since under the venue provision, if there are no kin in this state, then the county where his principal estate was situated at the time of his death. I also would submit to you...
Now, there was money here at the time of his death.
There was money, and one of the things I noticed in petitioner's argument is that saying, well, the Court of Appeals only held there was this cause of action. The fact of the matter is the Court of Appeals did not engage in any either factual or legal sufficiency with regard to the findings of fact and conclusions of law filed in the probate court. And in the probate court, they found that the existence of the bank account at IBC in the name of Don Juan Brittingham.
And that's $27,000?
That was about $27,000 at one time. I think it's vague in the record as to, but there was some money there, and the exact amount I don't know. I did notice in reviewing the record also, while not relied on by the probate court, if you look at Respondents Exhibit 4, that is a statement of account from Merrill Lynch for accounts standing in the name of Jubrico. The evidence, the finding by the probate court was, is that while assets were held in the name of those corporations, that they were in effect nominees for Don Juan Brittingham.
And those funds were still on deposit in Texas when this proceeding was filed.
That's correct. And
but in the name of the corporation.
In the name, and those were still standing in Jubrico's name. And as you know from the record, there was a transfer by the gentleman who was originally named as executor under the Mexican, or one of the executors under the Mexican will, but he testified he transferred about $15 million that had been located in Jabrico and San Fern's accounts in Texas, transferred those to a corporation called Okint that was owned by the children and grandchildren, some of the children and grandchildren, of Don Juan Brittingham. But significantly, even if he were acting at a time when he still held the position of executor, he would have no power in the state of Texas to effectuate a legal transfer of property that was subject at least to the possibility of jurisdiction in a Texas probate court. I handed to the court some handouts that really, I don't want to spend a great deal of time, but I think that they really kind of hopefully crystallize some of these issues. There's no question he had property, that Don Juan had property at the time of his death, and we contend that is the critical determination. Otherwise, the probate court would allow heirs to spirit property away between the time of probate's filed and the date of death. His will was admitted to probate in Mexico. And the reason that's significant is 95 allows you in that situation where the domiciliary jurisdiction has admitted a will to probate, it allows you to simply file in Texas. But it has a very significant provision as it relates to that. And it says once it is filed, that the administrator has all of the power of an administrator of an estate in Texas. That would be all of the power under sections 5 and 5A. So it seems to me that this idea that 95 somehow restricts the administrator is simply unsupported by the statutory language.
Section 95 says that there can be a proceeding in probate over a will, quote, which would affect any real or personal property in this state.
Correct.
How does the will affect the son's cause of action?
The way that it affects it, Your Honor, is that the will provides that before distributions are made to the devisees and legatees under the will, that all debts be paid. The claim by my client is that they hold a note, a debt, of Don Juan Brittingham, and are therefore entitled to have the assets of the estate marshaled, and then those debts paid.
So, is that would that be Mexican law, irrespective of the will? Isn't it usually the case that debts have to be paid before distributions are made?
I believe that's true, but I'm on dangerous ground when I start trying to tell you about what the law of Mexico is. I do know that both the will and, in this instance, the note upon which my client seeks to recover, both specifically refer to the testator's desire that the debts be paid, including specifically this note. This is not a case, and I think there's something in the briefs that might lead you to believe otherwise, this is not a case where there are competing administrations. The Mexican probate has proceeded. The Mexican probate, I believe, has in fact found my client's debt and has determined the amount. The probate has determined that the will is properly there. This is a proceeding to assert jurisdiction over assets in Texas that are beyond the reach of the executor in Mexico.
There's been a determination in Mexico that the debt had been paid, that the note had been discharged by a transfer of funds to another
country. I think that argument was made, but I do not believe that position was sustained. I can check that and file something, but I think maybe there was also an allegation about another note and payment. But my information, I think it's, is that in a final unappealable judgment, he has been found to have a valid debt, and the amount of that debt has been determined. I will certainly check that, though, Your Honor, and make sure that I haven't misspoken. But this is not a battle. I would say that even if that weren't the case, the proper place to determine that would be in a court where the claim was, this is now res judicata. But that is a plea to the merits, not a plea to the jurisdiction. And it's also, I think, indisputable that the estate in Mexico has insufficient funds to pay the claim of my client.
That because of the distributions? Or did it, I mean, don't you think it, isn't it your position that it had the money at one time?
Well, I think it had money at one time if you took into account the $70 to $100 million worth of assets in the United States that were owned by Don Juan Brittingham.
Through these two companies.
Through these two companies. And on those companies, I want to say, it seems to me what the probate court found was, on the basis of the evidence of the people who held those, is that those companies really were nominees, that even though they held the stock, that those companies, the monies in those companies and the securities in those companies belong to Don Juan Brittingham individually, not to the corporation. Under tab 2, I've also just tried to lay out what I think the probate code requires and what I think the trial court's findings of fact were. And as I pointed out a moment ago, under item 4 there, section 95 itself says that the probate under that section shall have the same force and effect for all purposes as if the will had been probated by order of a Texas court, which would tell me that this supposed distinction between the powers of an administrator under 103 and 95 is, a matter of fact, I would say, not only questionable, it is not supported by the plain language of the statute. We've also, I don't intend to go through them all, but we have also attached the findings of fact and conclusions of law entered by the probate court in this matter. Now, at one point in the petitioner's brief, they say that we have not been able to cite to a single case in which Section 95 allowed an administrator to perform acts such as we say are allowed. If the court will look at Chamberlain versus Witts, which is a Dallas Court of Appeals writ refused NRE, that was a case specifically brought under 95 in which an accounting was sought, and the court sustained the jurisdiction. In fact, I think reversed the probate court, said you do have jurisdiction, and you have jurisdiction to entertain this suit for an accounting. So we would submit that the plain language of the statute, the long-held view, I think universal view in the United States, that a foreign executor or administrator has no power over Texas property, dictates that the probate court in this case properly had jurisdiction, and that the if this court determines that it has jurisdiction to consider this matter, that the Court of Appeals opinion be affirmed. Are there not any further questions? I believe that completes my presentation.
Thank you, Counselor.
Ms. Kaniska, do you agree that these assets belong to Don Juan, or are they assets of these two companies?
There was one bank account at IBC in the name of Mr. Brittingham, the decedent.
Right, I understand that.
The corporate assets were not in his name.
Well, what's your response to Mr. Ratliff's position that they were simply nominees?
That may be true, but it takes a cause of action asserted, which was not made in this case. And even if it had been properly asserted in this case, it would be one of the causes of action that would be incident to or appertaining to a mistake and viable under Section 103, which was not invoked here.
The Section 95 D1 says, when so filed and reported, it shall be deemed admitted. It have been just for all purposes as if the original will had been probated by order of the court. And then 103 allows you to probate. So what's the difference? Once you get it probated, it's probated for all purposes, isn't it?
No, Your Honor. Really what we're talking about is the pre-1973 code situation. Before that time, probate courts did not have what is now Section 5 incident to jurisdiction. They had to transfer those claims and causes of action to a district court for hearing. There are a number of activities, such as in accounting, that are traditional probate activities and which are permissible under Section 95. 95 is not an empty shell. It does provide a probate court with certain jurisdiction. It doesn't
provide... Yeah, but your position is it wholly overlaps 103.
That Section 95 is a subset of 103.
And there's nothing that you can do under 95 that you can't do under 103.
Well, there are, you cannot...
Except that you just, there are some short-circuited procedures.
But you cannot bring causes of action incident to mistake under 95 that you could bring under 103.
And where do you get the statutory language for that?
5F. All courts exercising original jurisdiction have the power to entertain incident to or appertaining to. It's also not correct to say that the Mexican executors had no authority in the state absent court intervention. We know from the structure of the probate code itself, Section 107A gives a foreign executor the power to come to Texas and collect debts without court intervention. We also know from the case law cited in the briefs, Hare, Nelson, and similar cases, other states have similar case law that say foreign executors do have limited powers within the state.
Going back to 95D1, it says, if you do it that way, it says, shall have the same force and effect for all purposes as if the original will had been probated by order of the court. Now, why doesn't that fit within 5F?
Because it's only ancillary jurisdiction.
But it says as if the original will had been probated for all purposes and had... That seems to say you treat it just like it was probated under 103.
If there's an apparent conflict, then what we need to do is look at the structure of the code. There are escalating levels of involvement. And if we treat 95 the same way as 103, we obliterate any difference. Why have 103 with heightened procedural mechanisms for the due process rights of the parties if there isn't a difference between the two of them? There is a difference. It's a functional difference between these extra causes of action.
And where do we go to find the due process rights that you have under 103 that you don't have under 95?
When you invoke 103, then the other provisions regarding notice, et cetera, the remaining portions of the probate code come into play. 95 is ministerial only. It's also incorrect to say that in this case, I'm arguing that the only remedy is in Mexico. That's not true. It's certainly the most logical place to seek a remedy because all of the parties now before the court are in the court in Mexico where there is a first-in-time probate proceeding, an open probate proceeding that is ongoing today. And Justice Owen, as we talked about earlier, it could have been possible to bring a Section 103 case. And specifically regarding your question, by the way, Justice Owen, there is evidence in the record that similar assets at issue were transferred to a company called Senator, and those went to Mr. Aguirre, the son.
But has there been a determination in the Mexico court that satisfy the promissory note?
I do not know. I do know that there has been litigation in Mexico regarding the priority of the different debts. There have been opportunities to bring these claims in Mexico, and they were never brought in Mexico.
Thank you, counsel. The cause is submitted, and the court will now.